B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to learn Psachim Daf Vav. We're going to start four lines from the top of the Amud. And the truth is that we should have learned this next piece of Gemara in the previous Shia with the previous Gemara, but we didn't, so we're going to learn it now. In the previous Gemara, we learned about the levels of responsibility that a person takes on a Goy's Chometz, and depending on whether he has responsibility on it, as to how much we attribute the Goy's Chometz to the Yisrael, and therefore the Yisrael is not allowed to see or own that Chometz, or that Chometz is not allowed to be in his possession over Pesach. So a related issue, says the Gemara, Boy minei Rabba. They ask Rabba the following question. Behemas aranona, an animal that was subject to the royal taxes, Chayeves bebechira or ein chayeves bebechira. If you have a herd of animals that are subject to tax, which means the king would typically take 10% of all the produce, 10% of the animals would go to the royal treasures. And the question is, are the firstborns born within such a herd, or within such a flock, is one chayev bechira or not? And the point of the question is that we know there's halacha in Hilchas Bechayr that if a regular firstborn animal that's born belonging exclusively to Yisrael, then it has the kedusha of Bechayr and is brought as a korban, and all the halachas we're going to learn about in Maseches Bechayrus. However, if the animal belongs even partially to a goy, then there's no, the Bechayr is not Kodesh, there's no halachas of Bechayra. Here, it's hard to say that the firstborn animal belongs to the Goy. It doesn't. It belongs exclusively to the Yisrael. But since it's slated or it's subject to taxes, and the king, the treasurers, are going to take 10% of this herd away, then do we say that that means that the Goy has a certain handle on this herd, and therefore it's not exclusively belonging to Yisrael, and therefore he's potter from Bechayra, or not? That was the question of the Gemara. Chayeves bebechayra, or ein chayeves bebechayra? Answers the Gemara. Kol hecha demotzi mesalik lei bezuzi, loy kami boilon. First and foremost, in a case where the king is not adamant to take the animals, he says, you want to give me money instead of the animals and keep the animals? That's fine. If that's the case, then we certainly say that the animals belong to the Yisrael exclusively. That if you don't want to pay for those 10% of the animals to the king will take away 10% of your animals. But since the king is not necessarily demanding the animals, we do not say that the animals belong partially to the goy. Ki komi boilon, what was the question? Heicha deloy motzi mesalik lebezuzi. My, in a case where the king is adamant to take the animals, and then we have to discuss what's the halacha in such a herd that the king takes 10% of the animals, do we say that the firstborns born to that herd are a bechira? Omer luhu, so Rab Rava answered to those that asked him, Ptura. They are potter from bechira. Asks the Gemara of Otanya Chayeves. There's an explicit brisa that says that in such a case one is chayev bechira. Says the Gemara, no. Hosom demotzi mesalikli. That brisa that says that behemas arnona is chayev is talking about a type of case where you could pay off the animals to the king with money, and then the king won't take the animals. In that case, indeed, the animal is exclusively belonging to the Yisrael and is going to be chayev. However, in the case where you cannot pay off the king and he's going to take the animals, then, like Rava said, he's potter. That's the first version of the Gemara. The second version, Ikr de Omra, Omar Rava, Behema Sarnona Ptura Mina Bechira. That a behema, where the firstborn behema in a herd, which 10% of it is subject to the taxes of the king, is potter from Bechira, V'af al gav de motzi mesalikli. Even in the case that you could pay off the king, you could say, take money, leave me the animals. Even in that case, we say from the fact that the king is coming and demanding 10% of the animals, even though you could pay it off, it's not called that the animals belong exclusively to Yisrael, and it's potter from Bechir. That's regarding Bechir. But there's another halacha. Isas Arnona. What happens if you have a doe, and the doe itself is also partially subject to the taxes to the royal taxes? In that case, chayeves b'chala. Even though with chala there's also a halacha that arisa yiseichem, you only have to take chala on dough that belongs exclusively to a Yisrael. So the halachas of b'chayr of arnona and isa of arnona should be the same. However, Rava said in the second version, Rava said that it's not the same. In the case of behemas arnona, he's completely potter, even if he could have paid off the king. In the case of Isa Sarnona, is chayev b'chala, is chayev to take chala, v'afal gav deloy motzi mesalikli. Even in the event where the king is going to insist on taking 10% of the dough and you could not pay him off, nonetheless, it's considered, or the halacha is in the same as if it was entirely yours and you have to take chala. My tam, why should there be a difference between the animal and the dough? The halachas of chala and b'chayra are similar in this context, that you're only chayiv if it belongs exclusively to the Yisrael. Says the Gemara, behema islei kola. With a behema, everybody knows that there's royal taxes, and if they're going to see that you're not taking the firstborns and making it b'chayr, everybody will know that the reason you're not making it b'chayr, not giving it kedushas b'chayr, is because the king and the taxes. However, isa leslei kola. In the case of the doe, there's no call. Not everybody knows. There's no voice telling everybody that the reason you didn't take chala is because the doe is somewhat also slated to be or subject to be given as tax to the king, and therefore it's not exclusively to the Yisrael. People won't know that. They'll just see that you've made this big doe and you're not taking chala and you're eating it. And people are going to get confused. And therefore we said in the case of chala that people will not know what's going on behind the scenes. You always have to take chala. Continues the next sugya. Tanu Rabbanon. Nochri shenichnas lechatzeri shel Yisrael, if a goy walks into the courtyard of a Yisrael on Pesach, ubetzekei b'yadoi, and he has a chometz dough in his hand. Ein zokuk levayr, the Yisrael is not required to dispose of that chometz. As we saw before in the Gemara, in the previous daf on Daf Hei, that we learn out from Lo Yiroye Lecho, that Shelecho Yatoroye, Avel Atoroye Shelachirim. If it belongs to the Goy and you have no responsibility on it, then you don't have to dispose of it. Hifkido Yetzli. However, if you gave it to him as a deposit, and that means that he took responsibility for it, then Zokuk Levayr. Then it belongs to the Yisrael somewhat, because of the responsibility he has with it, and because of the liability he'll have with on this bread if something goes wrong with it, if it gets lost or stolen. Therefore, it's considered somewhat his, and you have to dispose of it. Then the Braisa continues with the third detail. Yichad lo yibayis. In the event that the goy came in, and the Yisrael, he designated a corner of his house, a corner of his room, and he told him that goy, put your chometz over there. In that particular corner, in that case, ein zokuk levayr, he does not have to dispose of it, because telling the goy, put the deposit in that corner, is like telling the goy, I'm giving you that corner for you to do with it what you want, and you can put your chometz there, but I am not taking responsibility for it. And if I, the Israel, am not taking responsibility for it, I'm just telling you, put it in that corner, I give you permission to leave it in that corner, then since he's not taking responsibility for it, again, there's no problem of Bali Roy, Bali Motze, and the Yisrael does not have to dispose of it. Shene'emar lo yimotze. As it says in the Pasuk, lo yimotze, and here the Gemara is immediately going to ask, you just said the halacha that he's not chayev. If he designates a place in his home for the goy's chometz, then you're not chayev to dispose of it. How can you bring a Pasuk of lo yimotze, which says that chometz is not allowed to be found in your home? The Pasuk lo yimotze is a one that adds stringency and restriction to the amount of chometz you're allowed to have or allowed to be in close proximity of the Yisrael. And here you're saying that Ein Zokuk Levayr, he's not required to dispose of it, and you're bringing the Pasuk of Lo Yimotze. Maika Omar, what's this Pasuk adding to you? What's it telling you? So Omar of Popper says no. These words, Shenema lo yimotze, is not going on the last halacha that yichad lo yibayis, if you designated a home for him, a room, a corner for him, then you're not required to dispose of it. No, areisha koi. It's going on the beginning of the brisa, v'hochi ka'omar, and this is how you have to read the brisa. Hifkidoi etzloi, if he deposited, if the goy deposited his chometz by the Yisrael, and the Yisrael took responsibility for the chometz, then zokuk levayir, then the Yisrael is required to dispose of this chometz, and on this the brisa says, shenema lo yimotze, you learn this out from lo yimotze, and we saw that on Daf Hei Amud Beis. That's how Rav Papa explained the brisa. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says, no, lo'ilam ha-sefer koi. The words lo yimotze are actually going on the final statement in the brisa that says that if you designated a place for the goy's chometz, you're not required to dispose of it. So what does lo yimotze tell us about that? V'hochi komar, and this is how you have to understand the brisa. Yichad lo yibayis, if you designated a place for the goy to put his chometz, and you did not take responsibility for it, ein zokuk levayir, you do not have to dispose of the chometz. Shenemar, as it says, lo yimotze bebotechem. The words lo yimotze bebotechem mean that it's got to be available in your home. That means if it's in your home, that means it's available to you in your home. V'ha, but here, in the case where the Yisrael designated a corner and said, goy, this is your corner, it's not my corner for the duration of Pesach, even though he didn't do a legal rental, but he gave it to the goy and allowed the goy to use that corner, lav didehu, then we don't see this as being the home, so to speak, of the Yisrael, and therefore it's not available to the home of the Yisrael, and therefore there's no bal yirai. And we're explaining this whole Gemara as Rashi does. And the big question is that especially according to Rav Ashi, if the reason that if yichad lo yibayis, you do not need to dispose of the chometz, is because you didn't take responsibility for it, then the reason that you're potter is not because lo yimotzei bebateichem, it's because we saw in the Gemara shelcho yatoroye, aval atoroye shelachirim veshel gavoya. So that's something which the Ramban comes to town on. But either way, says the Gemara, carries the Gemara, denochri ki koma'ayil lebeisa denafshei koma'ayil. The Gemara explains that since I designated a corner for the goy, it's as if it's the goy's home. It's as if the goy is putting the chometz in his own home. It's not yimotzei bebotechem, it's not found in my home. Says the Gemara lememra. So are you suggesting that from here we see, from this brisa we see, the schirus, that rental, kanya, actually affects an acquisition? Even though there wasn't a real rental here, but he gave the goy permission to use that designated corner, it's similar to rental, and we say it's as if the goy is putting the chometz in his house, not in the Yisrael's house, therefore the Yisrael is not required to dispose of it. So that seems to be that schirus kanya, then just allowing somebody else allowing a tenant to use your home, that's similar to rental, it's a kinyan, it's not considered the landlord's home anymore. Votnan, this seems to contradict the Mishnah we learned. Af b'mokim she'omru lahaskir, there's places where you're allowed to rent a home or property to a goy, there are places that you're not allowed to rent property to a goy. Says the Mishnah says, even the places where you're allowed to rent property to a goy, lo lebeis dira, don't give it to him for his personal residence and dwelling, because he may bring avodah zarah into your home. Omru, lo lebeis dira omru, you're allowed to give it to him for storage and for his animals, but not for him to live in. Bipnei shemachnisin letoichei avodah zarah, because the goy is going to bring avodah zarah into the home of the Yisrael. And says the Gemara, that Mishnah is only understood is if you allow the goy to use, if you rent to the goy a home and the goy is the tenant, then bringing an avodah zarah into the home, it's still considered bringing the avodah zarah into the home of the landlord. That means that schirus loy kanya. Yisrael kadai toch to schirus kanya, but according to what we said here, that if Yisrael designated a corner for a goy, for his chometz, and the goy brings the chometz there, it's considered as if it's not being brought into the Yisrael's home, it's considered as if it's being brought into the goy's home, then why don't you say the same with avodah zarah? Rent it to the goy, and if he brings avodah zarah in, it will be as if he's bringing it into his own home, not into the home of the Yisrael. When the goy brings the avodah zarah into his home, he's bringing it into his own home. So what's the issue with that? Answers the Gemara, no. Shan yehocha de'ofke rachmona b'loshen lo yimotze. Mi shemotze biyotcha, yotzo zeh she'enei motze biyotcha. The truth is that schirus lo ikanya. And that's why by avodah zarah you're not allowed to rent the home to the goy, because renting it to him doesn't make it his. However, here there's a special pasuk that says lo yimotze, that yimotze means that it's available. Mishem motzi biyotcha, if it's available for you at any moment, as if it's like yours in your property, in the property that's so to speak designated for your use. But yotzozeh, but if you designated this corner exclusively for the goy, she'enei motzi biyotcha, then the whatever's found in that designated area is designated exclusively for the goy and not for the Yisrael. It's not considered motzi biyotcha. It's not considered available and found to your hands. And therefore, we have this leniency that if the goy, that v'yichad lo yibayis, ein zokok levayir, he's not required to destroy the chometz. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Yehuda Omar Rav. If somebody finds chometz in his home in the middle of Yontov, it's muktzah. You're not allowed to take it out on Yontov. But it's true that you did bittel. So minatoira, you haven't transgressed bali roi and bali motzei. But you may come to eat it by mistake. If you just leave it exposed, the whole year round you eat chometz, what's stopping you eating it now on Pesach by mistake? And therefore, Yudah Marav says, koifolovis akli, you should invert a vessel on top of it, and that will act as a reminder. Don't go near this chometz, and as soon as Yom Tov is over, you have to burn the chometz, you get rid of it. Omar Rava, Im shel Hekdesh, however, if this chometz that you found actually belongs to Hekdesh, Einei Tzorich, he does not need to invert a kli on it, Mai Tama, Mivdel B'dile Minei, because the whole year people separate themselves and keep away from eating Hekdesh, you're not allowed to eat Hekdesh. Since the whole year people are careful not to go near Hekdesh, so the fact that it's chometz is not making it any worse, and therefore you do not need to invert a vessel on it. Continues the Gemara of Omer of Yehuda Marav, another halacha from the same Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav. Chemtzei shel nochri, if you have chometz of a goy in your home, in the event and in the case that you're not taking responsibility for it, and therefore there's no bali roya and bali motze, as we saw before, shelacho I atoroya, aval atoroya shel achirim v'shel gavoya. But nonetheless, you have to make a partition of 10 tvachim between the chometz of the goy and yourselves. Mishum heker, it should be a reminder, don't go near it. Ve'im shel hektish. However, if this chometz happens to belong to hektish, and it's in your home, not the goy, it's hektish chometz in your home, einei tzorich, you do not need to put up a partition. Ma'itama, mivdel b'dile in shminei, people, the whole year round they don't eat it, and therefore you're not going to come to eat it on Pesach either. Continues the Gemara of Omer of Yehuda Marav, another halacha from the same Rav Yehuda Marav, that hamafarish, if somebody sets out to sea, vayetza b'shayora, or he's going on a long journey with a caravan, koidum shloishim yoim, if he leaves his home more than 30 days before Pesach, ein zokuk levayir, he's not obligated to destroy his chometz in his home. He's leaving his home behind, he's leaving his chometz behind, and he's leaving before the 30-day period. We'll soon see the nature of the 30 days, why 30 days was chosen. But if he leaves before 30 days, he's not required to do any hishtadlus, to do any effort to get rid of chometz. He's left before you have to think about Pesach. Now, when Pesach comes closer, and you're not home, there's nothing you can do. You have to do bittel, but you can't do bedika and you can't do biur, and that's fine. Toich shleishim yom. However, if you're setting out within 30 days before Pesach, zokuk levayir, then you're obligated to destroy and get rid of any chometz that you know is going to be around when on Pesach. Omar Abaye. Abaye said, "Hod do omras toich shleishim yom zokuk levayir, that if you leave within 30 days, you have to destroy the chometz. Lo omron elo shadai to lachzer. That's only true if you're planning to come back on Pesach. You come back on Pesach, you'll find chometz there. That's going to be tragic. As we saw before, you might come to eat it by mistake. Aval ein dai to lachzer. But if he's not planning on coming back on Pesach, then even if he left before Pesach, within 30 days, he does not need to get rid of the chometz. Ein zokuk levayra. Omale Rava. Rava said to Abaya, I don't understand. If he has intentions of coming back on Pesach, and then you, Abaya, said that if he's coming back on Pesach, then if he left within 30 days, he has to get rid of the chometz, and if he left before 30 days, you don't need to get rid of the chometz. But I don't understand. If he's planning to come back on Pesach, who cares when he left? Even if he left Rosh Hashanah, filo miRosh Hashanah nami, even if he left from Rosh Hashanah, which is many, many months before Pesach, and even before that, Rosh Hashanah is just a mark many months before Pesach, but even leaving before Rosh Hashanah, even if you leave on Motzah Pesach and you have chometz in your house and you know you're going to be there next Pesach, of course you have to get rid of it. Ela Omar Rava, Rava argued with Abaya, and he said, this that we said, that if you leave before 30 days, you do not need to get rid of the chometz. That's only if you're not planning to come back on Pesach. But if you plan to come back on Pesach, it doesn't matter when you leave, you need to get rid of the chometz. If you leave within 30 days, says Rava, then even if you're not planning to come back, you have to get rid of the chometz, not like Abaya said. If you're leaving before 30 days, then you do not need to get rid of the chometz unless you're planning to come back on Pesach. You're planning to come back on Pesach, it makes no difference when you're going to leave. You've got to get rid of the chometz first. V'oz de Rava l'tamei, this is Rava with his own opinion. D'omar Rava, ha'oise beisoy oitzer, if somebody turns his home into a storehouse, which means he had chometz in his house, and now he just filled the house up to the ceiling with crops, with fruits, with whatever it is. And that's considered, for all intents and purposes, it's considered that the food is not reachable. It's the same halacha as noflol of mapoiles, that pile, a wall and a pile of stones fell on top of the chometz, because the chometz is totally inaccessible. Then if that happened koidim shleishim yoim, before 30 days, of before Pesach, ein zokuk levayir. Then since it's before 30 days, and from this point on it's no longer reachable on Pesach because it's underneath this whole storehouse, it's not accessible at all. And therefore, in Zokuk Levayir, you're not obligated to destroy the chometz. Toich Shloishim Yoim, however, if it happened within 30 days, then since at the 30-day mark the chometz was still reachable, then Zokuk Levayir, you have to get rid of it. You're not allowed to dispose of it in any way other than Biur Chometz. You're not allowed to, lekatchila, put a pile of stones on top of the Chometz and say, that's my Biur Chometz. No. If you know this Chometz and it's within 30 days and you have a requirement to make sure that from 30 days you have a requirement to take into account the halachas of Pesach, to start living Pesach and getting rid of your Chometz, then if you have Chometz, the only way you're allowed to get rid of it is by doing Tashbisu. And Tashbisu is not, you don't do Tashbisu lekatchila by piling, making it into an oitzer, by piling stones or anything else on top of the chometz. V'koidim shloishim nami le'omron, even before 30 days, le'omron elo she'en daito lefanoisoi. If you covered it over before, that means you turned the home into a storehouse, or so to speak, you piled a pile of stones on top of the chometz, even before 30 days, that's sufficient, even though it's not Tashbisu. Before 30 days, you don't have to do Tashbisu, on condition, Shein Daitu Lefanoisoi, that you're not going to remove this, the storehouse part, or everything you've piled on top of the chometz, you're not planning to remove it before or on Pesach. Avol Daitu Lefanoisoi, and that's similar to coming back to your home on Pesach, Afilu koidim shleishim yom nami zokuk levayir. If you know that when Pesach comes, the chometz is not going to be in a buried state, then even if the burial, so to speak, happened way before Pesach, if you know that there's a chance it's going to become unburied by Pesach, you have to get rid of it. Asks the Gemara, Hanish shleishim yom mayavidatayu. This 30-day mark that we're talking about here, what's the purpose of it? What's this 30 days come from? Says the Gemara Kedetanya, it's the Tanakama of the following Brisa. Shoyalin v'doyrushin b'hilchas ha-Pesach, koidim ha-Pesach shloishim yoim, and this is a sugi in Megillah, that 30 days before Pesach, one has to start engaging in the halachas of Pesach, and we have to be actively busy with Pesach. And Rashi says that because those are the 30 days that we are engaged in learning the halachas of Pesach, from that time on, it's incumbent upon him to be extra careful with the needs, with the halachas, the requirements of Pesach. And since on Pesach you're not allowed to own, or no chometz is allowed to be found in your possession, that point, therefore, within these 30 days, you're not allowed to do anything that means you have to do everything in your hands to make sure that you don't have any chometz in your possession on Pesach. So that's the Tanakama. Tanakama say that Sherlin Vedorishim, we engage in Pesach 30 days before, and that's all these halachas we saw 30 days before Pesach. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel argues with the Tanakama and says, no, Shtei Shabbosis, one's only Sherlin Vedorishim, we only ask questions and give drushas and delve into the halachas of Pesach only 2 weeks before Pesach, not 30 days. Asks the Gemara, my Talmud the Tanakama, what's the source, the reasoning for the opinion of the Tanakhama that 30 days before a Yom Tov is the time that we start engaging and preparing for the Yom Tov? Shari, Moshe Oimed B'Pesach Rishon. Moshe was standing, he was speaking on the first Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan, U'Mazhir Ala Pesach Sheni, and he was already talking to Klal Yisrael about the Pesach Sheni 30 days later. Pesach Sheni is done on the 14th of Iyar. Shenemer, as it says in the Pasuk, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-Pesach b'moyadoi. And other Mepharshim suggest that the Gemara means to bring the Pasuk a few Pesukim later, Vayasu es ha-Pesach b'rishoin b'arbo'os ha-yoyim l'chidesh b'inu arbaim, that they have to do the Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. Uchsiv, and the next Pasuk after that, it says, Vayihi anoshim ha-shahoyu t'meim l'nefesh odom, that those people that were tomei, they could not bring the first Korban Pesach, they should bring the second Pesach, the Pesach Sheni. So you see, the Tanakhama say that you see that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about Pesach Sheni on Pesach Rishon. So you see that 30 days is the amount of time that one engages in a Yom Tov, before the Yom Tov. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that normally the span is 2 weeks, how is he going to explain these psukim? Normally we spend only 2 weeks before. Over here, that Moshe was busy telling Klal Yisrael about Korban Pesach for the first Pesach, then he just added on another halacha of Korban Pesach as it would apply a month later. But it's only because he was discussing Korban Pesach, he added on a few details. But regularly, the halachas of a Yom Tov are only discussed and engaged in 2 weeks before the Yom Tov. Continues the Gemara, my Talmud Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. What's the source, the reason of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion that always before a Yom Tov, only 2 weeks before, are spent Sheolim V'Dorishim discussing the halachas of the Yom Tov? Shari Moshe Oimed Barash Chodesh. Moshe Rabbeinu was standing, he was holding by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Umazir ala Pesach, and he already started talking to them about Pesach, which was done 14 days later. Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, HaChodesh hazeh lochem Rosh Chodoshim, Rishenu lochem lochot she'ashono. That's one Pasuk. And the next Pasuk, Uchsev, what does it say the Pasuk right after that? Right after Moshe Rabbeinu says, HaChodesh hazeh lochem, this is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the Pasuk says, Dabrel kol adas Yisrael lemer be'oso l'chodesh hazeh v'yikhu lem ish sele beis avos sele bois v'goymer. And then the psukim carry on, take the Korban Pesach on the 10th day and prepare it and shecht it on the 14th. So you see that Moshe was standing on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and was talking to them about Pesach, which was 2 weeks later. Asks the Gemara, Mimayda b'resh yarchakoy? Dilma barbo b'yarchoy b'chamisha b'yarchakoy? It doesn't say in this Pasuk that it was on Rosh Chodesh, it just says HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, Rosh Chodoshim. This month, the month of Nisan, is the first month in the yearly cycle. But it doesn't say that he was standing on Rosh Chodesh. Maybe he was standing a few days into the month, and then it's even less than 2 weeks before Pesach. Elo Omar Rabbe Bar Simi Mishmei Deravina Mehacha. The source for Shimon ben Gamliel is from the following Pasuk. It says in the Pasuk, Vaidaber Hashem El Moshe B'Midbar Sinai B'Shono Ashenis B'Chodesh HaRishon. The second year from after Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim, b'chodesh harishon, on the first month, that's where Moshe Rabbeinu was standing. Uksiv, and it says in the pasuk, v'yasu b'nei Yisrael es haPesach b'moyadoi. The pasuk after the first pasuk says that he was standing b'shona hashenis b'chodesh harishon, which is Rosh Chodesh, which is Nisan. And the next pasuk it says, "Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es haPesach, make the korban Pesach b'moyadoi," which is 2 weeks later. So you see here that Moshe was engaged in halachas for 2 weeks. Says the Gemara Hachanami, "Mimai deberesh yarchakoi." Who told you he was standing Rosh Chodesh? The pasuk just says b'chodesh harishon, in the first month in Nisan, some point at the beginning of Nisan, he was telling Klal Yisrael that on the 14th of Nisan, bring a korban Pesach. Who told you it was Rosh Chodesh? Who told you it was 14 days, 2 weeks before? Dilma barbo b'chamisho b'yarcha koi, maybe it was the 4th of Nisan, the 5th of Nisan, and it would still be accurate to say that it's b'shono ashen, it's b'chodesh harishon. So you still don't have a solid proof of to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion that they were engaged in halachas for 2 weeks. Omer of Nachon b'Yitzchok, Asya midbar mimidbar. There are two psukim that both mention the word midbar, and we compare the two, gzeira shava. Ksiv hocha, it says in one posuk, which is this posuk, where it says b'chodesh harishon that we just mentioned, it says b'midbar Sinai. It says v'idaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shona Hashen is b'chodesh harishon. It mentions midbar Sinai. Uchsiv hosam, and it says elsewhere v'idaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'oyel moed b'echod l'chodesh Hasheni. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu was in Midbar Sinai, speaking about, again, Midbar Sinai, the desert of Sinai, and he was standing in the oil moed, Be'echod l'chodesh hasheni. It was the second month. It was a month later than the pasuk we mentioned before. But it says clearly it was Be'echod l'chodesh. It was the Rosh Chodesh of the second month. It was Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So the Gemara says, Ma'ala alon b'Rosh Chodesh. And the same way as Rosh Chodesh Iyar, which is mentioned in this pasuk of Be'echod l'chodesh hasheni, is talking about on Rosh Chodesh. It says explicitly Be'echod l'chodesh hasheni on the first day. Afkan, so too the other posuk that speaks about the Chodesh HaRishon is Rosh Chodesh, is talking about the first day of Rosh Chodesh. And since we have a source that the posuk of Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shono hashenis b'chodesh harishon, now that we know it's talking about Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and it says in the posuk after that Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es haPesach b'moyadoi, that Moshe then told Klal Yisrael, go and do the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. So you see, they engaged in halachas for 14 days, for 2 weeks. That's the proof for Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Continues the Gemara. We just saw now that twice it says Bamidbar. And this, the next Gemara, according to Rashi, is not related to the whole discussion here. It's just asking another point. That we saw there was this one pasuk that speaks about the first day of Nisan in the second year. And then we had a different posuk that says we're talking about the first day of Iyar of that second year. But if you look in the Chumash, you'll see that the posuk that speaks about B'shono Ashenis B'chodesh HaRishon, the Rosh Chodesh Nisan of that second year, is in Perek Tes of Sefer Bamidbar. But the posuk that says V'idaber Hashem El Moshe B'midbar Sinai Bo'el Moed B'echod L'chodesh Hasheni, the Rosh Chodesh Iyar of that year, is actually in the Perek Aleph of Sefer Bamidbar. Asks the Gemara, V'nichtev B'reisha D'chodesh Rishon V'hodo Nichtev D'chodesh Sheni. Why is Chodesh Rishon discussed in Perek Tes and Rosh Chodesh Iyar discussed in Perek Aleph? The order seems to be wrong. Answers the Gemara, Omer of Menashe bar Tachlifa, Mishmei Derav, Zois Oimeres. This is one of the proofs, so this is what people say, or this is what we know, that Ein Muktim U'Muchur Batayra. The Torah was not written in chronological order, and the Torah didn't matter the order. The fact that something happened before something else does not mean it was recorded in the Torah first. Omer of Papa. Now we're going to discuss a little bit when we say this concept that there's no chronological order in Torah. Omer of Papa. Loi Omron Elo Betrei in Yona. It's only when it's two completely different topics, then we say it's two different topics and they're written in different places in the Torah. It doesn't mean that they actually happened in the sequence that they're recorded in the Torah. Aval b'chad in yon, if it's one topic, ma'idemukdem, ma'idemukhr, of course, if you're discussing a single incident, a single topic, then what's recorded first happened first. What's recorded second happened second. If you're not going to say that, then we're going to have an issue with one of the big rules of the Torah. There's a rule, klal uprat, and we're not going to go now into all the details and examples. As we go through Shas, we'll find them. But there's a concept called that the Torah says a rule, and after that, the Torah says just a detail that we would have thought that the detail is included in the rule. Why does the Torah single out a detail? Ein bichlal elo mashe befrat, to teach us that the nature of the rule is got to be identical to the nature of the detail that singled out. Says the Gemara, Dilma Prato Klalhu. That's all very good if you had a rule and then the detail was singled out. But if you say that even in one topic there's no order in the Torah, then just because the rule is written first and then the detail, that doesn't mean it's a detail that was expressed after the rule. Maybe the detail was expressed before the rule, and then it's not called Klal Uprat. It's called Prat Uklal. And the rules for Prat Uklal are different than the rules for Klal Uprat. Says the Gemara, Di'iloite Mahoch, if you don't say that in one inyun there is an order, Klal Uprat, Ein Bechlal, Elomashe Beprat, Dilma, Prat Uklalhu. How any Klal Uprat, maybe it's a Prat Uklal. Vesu, and also, Prat Uklal, when you the rule of a detail that's mentioned before the rule, then nase klal moisif ala prat. When you have a detail, and after the detail, you have a rule that the rule really would have incorporated the detail, and nonetheless the detail is written before the rule, then the way we understand that is that the rule is coming to add something and include something that would not have been included in the detail. Dilma klalo pratu. How can you say that since the rule was quoted, was written after the detail, it's coming to add something? Maybe the fact that it's written afterwards, but maybe it was said before. So every pratu klal, maybe it's a klalo prat. Says the Gemara, okay, I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the rules of klalo prat force us to say that there must be chronological order within one topic. I hear that, but let's take it a step further. Are the rules of klal uprat or prat uklal only applying within one topic? Do we not say that there's a concept of klal uprat even in two topics? And in two topics, you all agree that there's no chronological order. How are you going to make sense of that? Even in two separate topics, there must be chronological order because there's a concept called klal uprat even in chronological, even in two different inyonim. And you said before that ein muktam u'mocher b'Torah, well, in two inyonim at least, but in two inyonim, in two different parashiyos, which are always two inyonim, we also use prat uklal. Is that true? Honi chalamando oma klal uprat hamuruchokim ze mizeh ein donin oisei b'klal uprat. According to the opinion that says, indeed, when it's two parashiyos, we do not use the rules of klal uprat. Shapir, then I can understand that we don't use these rules, and indeed there's no chronological order, it's okay. Within one inyan, where everybody uses the rules of klal uprat, indeed there is a chronological order. Elo lamando omadonin, according to the opinion that says that even in two parashiyos, in two different topics, we do use the rules of klal uprat. Michael Amema, what are you going to say? How can you use klal uprat or prat uklal if there's no chronological order? Answers the Gemara, Afilu lemando oma donin, even according to the opinion that says that we do use the rules of klal uprat, hanim mili bechad inyona, aval betrei inyona ein donin. The whole machleikas that we had was, if you have two parashiyos, do you say klal uprat or do you not say klal uprat? If you don't say klal uprat, that's fine. If you do say klal uprat, we ask the question, if it's two parashiyos, Ein muktam u'mocher b'Torah, says the Gemara, no. Even according to that opinion that you say klal uprat, even when it's not within one parasha, and even when it's two parashas, we say klal uprat, it's only if it's one inyan. An inyan can spread over a number of parashas. That's not the way we understood when we asked the question. But the Gemara is now telling us that a single inyan can spread over a number of parashas, and since it's one topic, then we say that there is chronological order, even if it's in two topics, even if it's in two parashiyos. If it's two parashiyos with two separate topics, everybody agrees you don't say klal uprat or prat uklal, and indeed there's no muktam u'mocher b'Torah in two inyonim, in two topics, and everything is understood. And Emir Tzashem, in the next shir, we're going to continue from here.